He writes to James Madison in 1785, I am conscious that an equal division of property is impracticable, but the consequences of this enormous inequality, producing so much misery to the bulk of mankind, legislators cannot invent too many devices for subdividing property. And in fact, the ideas he has in mind are straightforward things like abolishing primogeniture and entail, laws that require large entailed estates to be handed on entirely to only one child, the eldest son. But he has other ideas. Another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point, and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progression as they rise, a progressive tax. Jefferson is a full century ahead of his time. It will not be till the early 20th century when we finally do get progressive taxation in the United States. And then he moves on to state his principle. The earth is given as a common stock for man to labor and live on. If for the encouragement of industry we allow it to be appropriated, we must take care that other employment be provided to those excluded from the appropriation. If we do not, the fundamental right to labor the earth returns to the unemployed. It is not too soon to provide by every possible means that as few as possible shall be without a little portion of land. The small landowners are the most precious part of a state. Well, this leads Jefferson into very radical ground. He begins to argue for the abrogation of all inherited public debts. He begins, in fact, argues for a provision that would limit all legislation, including constitutional arrangements, to a single generation of duration. As again, he writes to Madison, the question whether one generation of men has a right to bind another seems never to have been started, either on this or our side of the water. Yet it is a question of such consequences as not only to merit decision, but place also among the fundamental principles of every government. I set out on this ground, which I suppose to be self-evident, that the earth belongs in usufruct to the living, that the dead have neither power nor rights over it. Now, he's aware, as he says, I suppose that the received opinion that the public debts of one generation devolved on the next has been suggested by our seeing habitually in private life that he who succeeds to lands is required to pay the debts of his ancestor or testator, without considering that this requisition is municipal only, not moral. So he's seriously considering the possibility of abnegating debts, of each generation starting with a clean slate. As he states, every constitution then and every law naturally expires at the end of 19 years. That's because Jefferson calculates that 19 years is the average age of a generation. If it be enforced longer, it is an act of force and not of right. Now, historians have noted that this is fundamentally a silly constitutional provision, and I think they're right, but I think they might be ignoring the extent to which Jefferson is pushing at the envelope, as it were, of libertarian principle. He's trying to find the ground on which he can successfully, in his own mind at least, describe the conditions under which a legitimate government can be based on the consent of the people. All right, let's turn to Jefferson's primitivism. We've seen this before, that he had a bit of a dalliance with the Rousseauian notion in the superiority of natural man, of the savage. It gets extremely pronounced in his years in Paris. He writes to Edward Carrington, I am convinced that those societies, as the Indians, which live without government, enjoy in their general mass an infinitely greater degree of happiness than those who live under the European governments. Among the former, public opinion is in the place of law and restrains morals as powerfully as laws ever did anywhere. And again, we're back to shame versus guilt. Among the latter, under pretense of governing, they have divided their nations into two classes, wolves and sheep. I do not exaggerate. In fact, to Madison, he'll break this division down into three forms of society. Society exists under three forms sufficiently distinguishable. One, without government, as among our Indians. Two, under governments wherein the will of everyone has a just influence, as is the case in England in a slight degree, and our states in a great one. Three, under governments of force, as is the case in all other monarchies and in most of the other republics. It is a problem not clear in my mind that the first condition, that of the Amerindians, is not the best. But I believe it to be inconsistent with any degree, great degree of population. Finally, I want to turn to the discussion of Jefferson's embracing of the right to revolt. This is particularly important because he expresses these principles at the exact moment of Shays' Rebellion. Shays' Rebellion is a tax revolt in western Massachusetts, where farmers unable to pay their taxes and afraid that their farms will be foreclosed literally take up in arms and close down the county courts.